All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I get to be the host of today's program. I was a chief warrant officer, helicopter pilot in Vietnam, 1969, United States Army. So I want to welcome you to our program. It's really exciting. This is our benefits program this month. So if you have any questions, you can give us a call here live on the air. The number is 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600. As I mentioned, we're going to be talking about benefits. And we're also going to be having someone on the program to talk to us today about getting the vote out. As we know, the election is coming up fairly quickly. And here on Veterans Radio, we try to remain as apolitical as possible. All we care about is that our elected officials keep their promises to us. And so we're not going to be getting into any debates or anything on our program here about who you should vote for, who you should not vote for, and so forth. But we are encouraging everyone to get out that vote. But before I introduce my first guest, I want to make sure that I thank our faithful sponsors, and that includes Legal Help for Veterans, the National Veterans Business Development Council, Eisenhower Center, VetBiz Central, and the Vietnam Veterans of America Post 310, American Legion Post 46, and VFW Post 423, all of Ann Arbor, Michigan. If you want to learn more about these organizations and the services that they provide, please go to our website, veteransradio.net/our sponsors. Joining me on the air right now is a new friend of Veterans Radio, and I'm anxious to talk with him. He is retired Army General Donald Schenck, and Donald is also an advisor to the Fisher House, Michigan, and that's one of the reasons how we connected here, and I want to thank Fisher House for putting us in touch with each other. So, Don, just welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thanks a lot, Dale. I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you and all your audience of righteous veterans who have done so much for our country over their service and their family members as well. It's great to be with you.
Well, thank you very much. It is a great audience. I have to admit that. True patriots are out there. One of the reasons that we connected here is that you are part of an organization that is putting out a Get Out the Vote webinar or a Zoom call that's coming up this coming Thursday, the 29th of October. Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah, and before I do, I'd just like to reiterate what you said about just how important it is for everybody to get out the vote this year. This is going to be a very, very interesting 7 to 10 days coming up. This is an extraordinarily important election for our nation. It's also extraordinarily important not only for the people at the top of the ticket, but for all those positions that and propositions and proposals that are oftentimes relegated to the back of the ticket. It's important that everybody pay attention not only to the president and vice presidential picks, but also throughout the ticket at the throughout your ballots, rather, for the Senate, the members of Congress and House of Representatives, your county, city, township officials, judges, members of the school board. Every one of those positions is important, and every one of those positions is relevant to what we do and how we live our lives every day. And there are things, the opportunity to vote for them are things that we hold very, very dear as veterans. There's a lot at stake for our country. The organization that I'm affiliated with is taking part in a Get Out the Vote campaign. We're actually having an event, as Dale said, Thursday evening at 8 p.m. And this will be a Zoom event. And I can give you a web address here that you can go to and request the credentials for the event. We don't have the actual credentials, the login credentials yet, but they're probably going to be delivered either tomorrow or Tuesday.
Okay, we can put that information up on our website once we get that information later in the week.
Great. great, but I'll just go ahead and give it to you right now. It's nsl4b.michigan@gmail.com. An email to that address will get you all the credentials once we get them. And as you just said, once I get them, I'll get them to you as well. And you can post them there on your informative website.
Okay. You know, could you give me that email address one more time, a little slower?
Certainly. It's I'll just spell this out so we can all can understand it. November Sierra Lima 4Bravo.Michigan, spelled out, Mike India Charlie Hotel India Golf Alpha November @gmail.com.
Okay.
And we're going to have a panel of four people. I'm honored to be on that panel, as is Brigadier General Mark Montjar, who's also from Michigan. And we're going to be joined by Ambassador Dwayne Wirth, who's a retired Air Force pilot, who's also a past senior leader in the Airline Pilots Association, was actually the ambassador to the International Civil Aviation Organization located in Montreal. And we have another Air Force veteran with us, General Fig Newton, who retired in 2001, I believe, as the commander of all Air Force education operations inside the United States Air Force. And we're going to talk about, we'll talk about anything the audience wants to talk about, but we're really going to talk about the role of government, why this election is so very, very important, what leadership at the national and state levels needs to look like, and why our relationships around the world and within the country are so very, very important, and the importance of just being good citizens and good citizen soldiers for those of us who are still either in the Guard, Reserve, or on active duty.
Right. We're talking here with retired Brigadier General Donald Schenck. I wanted to just touch on this because I did listen to another interview that you were on with WUOM here in Ann Arbor. And the line that came out of there, and it's something that we all have learned from day one when we go into the military, and that we know, we swear allegiance to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I thought that this was really important because the military, and I guess we could touch on this just briefly, is that, you know, we are controlled by the civilian politicians, whoever it is. I mean, we don't make up our own rules. We don't decide that we're going to go rogue and, you know, whatever happens out there. And I think that there are some people that are a little bit concerned about that. So I just wanted you to touch on that for just a moment, if you could.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, we all swore, whether it was an oath of enlistment or a warrant or a commission, we swore to support and defend the Constitution, and we did not swear fealty or loyalty to any single individual, but rather to this notion of what a democratic government ought to look like. And one of the most important precepts of our government, dating back to our founding fathers with Washington, was the primacy of civilian control of the military. And we believe, and I think anyone in the audience would also agree, that that is one of the things that has kept our country actually quite safe, because we have always known that there's a very, very low likelihood that members of the military would do anything except support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And there is a lot of anxiety about exactly what's going to happen in the next several months, but I believe with my heart of hearts that our military will always do what's required of it by Constitution and by the oath that each of our members swore.
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree with you more. So I just want to remind people to check out veteransradio.net. We will put a link up there for their Zoom meeting or Zoom seminar that they're going to be holding on this coming Thursday, the 29th of October. My note says that it's going to be at 1900 hours Eastern time, correct?
Actually, I've been advised. Well, let me make sure I've got
that changed.
Right. I was advised earlier it's going to be at 8 o'clock. But I will clarify that in the next note that I send to you, just to be absolutely sure.
Okay, well, we'll get that information out there. But I want to thank you very much, retired General Donald Schenck, the United States Army, and advisor to the Fisher House here in Michigan. Thanks very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, and thank you all. Thank you to all of our guests and everybody that is here. I hope everybody stays safe, stays healthy, gets their flu shot, and makes a plan to vote.
Okay, everybody, make sure you vote, but only once.
All right, Jeff, all right. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. All right. So we're here on Veterans Radio today. Today is our benefits program. So we've got a couple of questions that have already come in, and we're going to address those with our guests as soon as we take our first break. And so we're going to be doing that in a second. As you can see that that our Derek is on the phone, probably answering questions as we get ready to go to this break. So you're listening to Veterans Radio, and we will be back in just a moment with hopefully to answer your benefits questions.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. There are thousands of veterans still living on the streets of our nation. Please support Veterans Matter. Your donation can help house a veteran in minutes and prevent another from losing their home. Donate at veteransmatter.org or text VETS to 41444 to make a donation of any amount. Let's all help Veterans Matter take care of our own. Thank you.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Yep. What's going on? That's what we're going to be talking about today. What's going on with your veterans hospital, your medical care? What's going on with your benefits, disability benefits? Any questions that you have about what's going on with the VA right now, either hand. So we want to encourage you to give us a call. The local number is 734-822-1600. And joining me right now are our three guests, our three experts for the day. Number one, and I'll do this, is our retired Brigadier General, United States Air Force, Carol Ann Falzone, who works with Legal Help for Veterans and is a veterans advocate from the word go. So, Carol Ann, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Dale. I can't believe it's going to be almost November.
I know. It almost felt like it was going to snow today. I know you're down south, but that's not fair.
I'm here in the great state of Michigan. Go Blue.
Okay. Well, yes, we had a successful game yesterday. All right. Also joining us is on the benefits side of our panel is Michael Smith, who is the Director of Veteran Services here in Washtenaw County. Michael, welcome back.
Dale, it's always good to join you and our colleagues on the air, and thank you for the welcome. I bring you greetings from the Washtenaw County Department of Veterans Affairs.
Thank you very much. And finally, we have Brian Hayes, who is a public relations extraordinaire at the local Ann Arbor VA Hospital. Brian, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Dale. It's good to be back.
It's good to talk to all of you. It's been a busy month, and it looks like we're going to have a very busy month coming up in the next month. November and December should be very interesting. Brian, I'm going to start off with you. If there's anything new going on at the VA, my question I think I sent to you, and I'm not sure who the expert is here on this particular question, is what is the difference or what exactly is TRICARE or CHAMP VA? Can you answer that?
No, that's not something where I have any particular expertise in. Those are, you know, insurance programs. I know CHAMP VA is a little bit more, I believe, more for, you know, spouses and dependents, and TRICARE is more, I believe, an active duty kind of an insurance. So that doesn't really fall into my expertise.
Okay, well, I'll hold that question then for the benefits folks. Anything new going on at the Ann Arbor VA? Any changes in policy, or is it opening up a little bit more?
Oh my gosh, there's always something new going on. But as far as the you know, COVID policy restrictions that we have in place, those haven't changed. We're keeping the same restrictions in place. We're keeping a watchful eye on this second surge that we're experiencing. Want to make sure that our veteran, our patients, and staff stay safe. So you know, when you come into the hospital, you're going to need to have a mask on. We're doing you know, physical distancing at 6 feet. and we're keeping visitors restricted to one, you know, one that's a caregiver. If you need someone that can, that you need to have assistance during an appointment, that's fine. As long as everybody's got a mask on, should be good to go. And other things that are changing, you know, business continues. We've just opened our brand new intensive care unit. We talked a little bit about that just opening last month, but now it's open. And our state-of-the-art tele-ICU hub is open, which opens up intensive care through all of the hospitals in our region. So, you know, if you need expertise from a physician and you're in our intensive care unit and there's a physician who has expertise in your illness, that physician can dial in from, you know, Cleveland or Cincinnati and look right into the room and look right at you in your intensive care bed and assist with treatment and monitor your care, which is really, you know, some astonishing technology. VA has invested nationally about $100 million in that technology, and so it's going to be filtering its way through all of the hospitals. So be looking for that. And we're here in Ann Arbor. We're lucky, and, you know, we're sort of the tip of that spear, and we're one of the first hospitals to have that technology, so we're very lucky. So we've got our ICU open, which is great. It's another state-of-the-art, bright, new, big windows, really nice intensive care unit. So that's going. We've also got, if you come into the hospital, you notice, you know, when you come through the first floor corridor there, we've got some new construction going on. There's almost always construction going on, but this one is in that first floor where we're redoing, you know, some primary care areas. Phlebotomy is getting done. We're finally getting to, you know, the point, you know, the dominoes have all fallen into place. We're actually going to start construction on our women's clinic very soon, and that's going to go around the corner right past ophthalmology where that entire corridor is going to be redone. So when you come into the hospital a year or so from now, it's going to look like a completely different place. It's going to be all brand new, bright, shiny, and good to go. Canton, the Canton Community-Based Outpatient Clinic, the construction for that is well underway. The steel went up for that in September. And that work continues, or that's been framed out. So we're looking forward to Canton coming online. That's going to be a CBOC that can service about 14,000 veterans. And we should have that open by, I think, middle of next summer. So as you know, when construction happens, things get pushed back. So I'd say early fall, we should see that opening up. And finally, I'm kind of wondering, patients out there that, you know, it's time to get your care. If you need care, get it. Make sure you call and get it scheduled. Don't postpone care because you think that maybe, you know, our restrictions are in place and we're not letting folks in the hospital. We absolutely are. If you need a face-to-face appointment for whatever ails you, you're going to get that face-to-face appointment, or we'll do it virtually if that works too. So those are some of the things that we're talking about right now at VA in Ann Arbor. And happy to take any questions if anybody has any.
Okay. Well, my question was going to be about flu shots.
Good question. We've got flu shots, drive-through flu shots going on right now in Flint and in Jackson. So you can just drive up and get a flu shot right in your arm, right through your car window. And and that's going into Ann Arbor, I want to say November 2nd. We're hoping that everything is in place. There's a lot of dominoes that have to fall into place because of that. That's actually going to be a sort of a temporary construction that happens in that north parking lot, that very front, big front parking lot you see when you come to the medical center. So we should have that up and running by next Monday. Also Toledo, the Toledo Clinic is going to have its drive-through flu shots running as well. In the meantime, we're giving free flu shots to veterans. If you just walk in the very front entrance of the hospital in the event center, you can walk in and get your flu shot. Same thing with Toledo. So we're giving flu shots, and we're giving a lot of them.
I think that's great. I did want to point out, maybe you can correct me if I misunderstood this. The flu shots are free for the veterans, probably, but dependents cannot get their flu shots at the VA.
No, we're not doing flu shots for dependents, just for veterans.
Okay, and all you dependents out there, you know, you can go to pretty much every drugstore in the county and get your flu shot for free anyway.
Pretty much, yeah. We're partnered, you know, for veterans who can't make it to the medical center, we're partnered with a lot of Meijer is on board this year. Walmart's not on board this year. They have been, but they're not. They didn't join us this year for flu shots. I want to say CVS is another one, and possibly Rite Aid. So it's easy to find out. Just give us a call, and you know, we can tell you where you can go that's close to you. Or you can go to va.gov and look at the website, and it'll just click through to the website, to the flu shot site, and it'll give you, you can do a little search, and it'll point out the pharmacies in your area that are doing flu shots for veterans.
Right. I just wanted to make sure that, of course, this is across the country. So the VA.gov is a website that will direct you to your local VA area, and you can find out where you can get those shots.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you very much, Brian. I'm excited to see what else is going on there.
I had another question,
I guess, and I hate to always put you on the spot here, but do you have anything, know anything about travel pay?
It depends on what you need to know. If it's resolving an issue, that would be something that you'd want to talk to our travel coordinator about.
Okay, because there was a question about that we got about travel pay, more paperwork for travel pay again for some reason. And I'm not familiar with that since I don't get travel pay. I live too close. But
right, yeah.
Okay.
There's a portal that you log into to get your travel pay. You know, for a while, I think we had this digital signature pad that you can do when you did your appointment and you sign this pad and take care of it. Now, it's not really paperwork. You just log into a website, put your information and your trip in, and then your travel pay is taken care of.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll get that question to them. Thanks a lot, Brian, very much for being on the program.
If you have anything specific like that, Dale, just feel free to put that in an email and I'll make sure to follow up with you, and then you can follow up with your listener.
Okay. Will do. Thanks. Stay tuned. We may be back with you shortly. All right. So I'm going back to Michael and Carol Ann. We're talking benefits today on Veterans Radio. If you have a question, you can give us a local call at 734-822-1600. For those of you that are outside of our immediate listening area, you can always send me an email or go to our website and send your question through that so that we can get them before the end of November's program on benefits so that we can answer your questions. Michael, I'm going to come to you right now. You had a bunch of them, but I got a question that came across through email today, and that was came out just the other day. It's about benefits. It's about disability benefits and divorces. And it said the court ruled disability compensation is federally protected. You'll know the numbers. I don't. And cannot be used as a funding source for a veteran's obligations in divorce proceedings. Are you familiar with that?
Well, Dale, the only court case that I'm aware of is the Rose case, which went to the Supreme Court, and Mr. Rose was a retiree, and the issue was whether or not his retired military pay could be assigned as child support, and the issue came down to his disposable income, because he was also receiving VA compensation. Now, as you know, military retirees, prior to concurrent retired and disability payments and prior to combat-related special compensation, and in some cases, still have an offset to their military retired pay if they're receiving disability compensation. The idea here is, I'll give you an example. Mr. Rose is getting $2,000 worth of military retired pay, he's getting $1,000 disability compensation. Therefore, his retired pay would be reduced by $1,000. His disposable income for the purposes of child support or any other court action would be $1,000. Well, essentially, the Rose case, basically, and the reason why is because VA compensation cannot be assigned or awarded or garnished in any way. But what the Supreme Court basically said was Mr. Rose still had an obligation to take care of his children, and that it could be used by courts, or all of his income could be used by courts to assign child support. So if there is a new case out there, I would have to familiarize myself with it, because the standard at this point is disability compensation. It all depends on state jurisdictions. There are some state jurisdictions where they do use disability compensation if that's the veteran's only source of income, and they can use it to determine child support.
Okay. All right. Well, I will forward this press release that I got over to you so you can read it. I thought it was rather interesting. The court case, it said the Supreme Court, in April of this year. But I'll follow up on that with you, Michael.
That's newer than the Rose case.
So the Rose case, yeah.
Yeah, I would love to be able to see that, yeah.
Okay, yeah, where did it come from? It came from Jared Berry, I think, down in Georgia. So attorney, does anybody know Carson Tucker? Says attorney Carson Tucker wins landmark ruling in Michigan Supreme Court. We'll find out more about this, folks, and get it up on our website.
Well, wait a minute, Carson Tucker is a news correspondent on Fox News.
Right.
No. That's Tucker Carlson.
Switched around. Way out words.
Yes. That's not. I'll get this information to you. I thought it was a rather interesting. It just came in this morning, so that's why I wasn't able to get it out to you folks. Carol Ann, let me go to you and let's see what's going on in the world of veterans benefits that has changed or anything upcoming, or is there going to be an increase are they getting the cost of living increases next year?
Well, we sure hope so. But I'm hoping that Brian is still on the line because maybe Michael knows a little bit about this. So apparently, And Brian started to address it. Over at the VA and across the country, we've been getting from our veterans questions about how come they're not getting their travel pay, how come the process is different, how come when you go into some of the VAs right now, they're asking you to fill out a piece of paper. So it seems like we've taken five steps back whereby before, and Brian was right, you'd go in, you'd present your VA card, you'd stick it into the little electronic device, and you'd sign your name, and that's all that you'd have to do for travel pay. Well, the word on the street is they are going to a brand new system that involves you signing up electronically and getting in through another portal. And in the meantime, until this gets all, you know, this all gets processed, you're reverting, at least in some places, to filling out a piece of paper, and that piece of paper will then be transferred or transacted with the VA staff. Now, that doesn't seem efficient to me, but what do I know? So that's why I was really interested in hearing if Brian knew anything of why this change is coming about, because the system seemed to work really well before. So that was a question that several of our veterans out in the audience have been asking.
Well, Brian, unfortunately, has checked out. But I think probably with all of the changes that are going on at all of the VAs with their upgrades and computer systems and programming, it's not surprising that hopefully it's just temporary that they have to go back to the old-fashioned paper route in order to get travel pay. Because I know in my appointments that I've had recently, they always ask me about travel pay, even though I'm not entitled to any.
Well, I think the interesting thing is with the electronic device that all you had to do is even if you scribbled your name, you just could make an X and it was done. So the other big concern is if they go through a portal, a computer portal, what about the veterans who are not doing this, who do not have a computer, who do not have those portals, whereby before you could just sign in very easily at a VA medical center. So that's why I was really interested in what was going on with that.
Yeah, well, we'll see what we can find out about that and report back to everybody next month or sooner in a newsletter. I think it's really important that we remember that. I think the VA is doing, this is personal comment here. I think the VA is doing a really incredible job considering the pandemic that's going on there. I've had virtual appointments. I've had in-person appointments. And I think as Brian pointed out, at your VA, if you really need an in-person appointment, that they're going to be able to accommodate you. I know that many people out there do not have reliable broadband internet connections, and there are many people also a little older that don't want to learn how to use a computer at all.
Well, and you're exactly correct, Dale. And the thing that we are very blessed in Michigan is that they are trying to connect with you physically and talk with you and make those appointments. I know as we're around the country, we're getting many veterans who were supposed to have appointments in February and March in other states, and they're still not able to get exams. And those exams, as you've heard from Michael and I, are very critical, because those exams with the C&P, your comp and pension, create that review of your chart so that you could get a disability rating. So if you can't get in to get those exams, either physically, virtually, or even talk to a provider, there are immense delays in other parts of the country, but not so much here in Michigan. So my hat's off to all of our VA medical centers and what they're doing.
I think they're all working really hard. Okay, Michael, I understand that you guys had a little veteran summit that went on last month, and you forwarded me a couple of questions. And
so
the first one I wanted to address before we take a break, because I think this one's fairly easy, is eligibility for a VA loan. Or so this person wanted to transfer a traditional loan to a VA loan. Could you kind of take us through the steps on that quickly?
Yes. The gentleman had asked, you know, how does he qualify his current mortgage that he has through a condominium agreement, and he's in a condominium association. How does he get a VA loan? And essentially, the VA allows for veterans who currently have home loans through any other traditional route to do a refinance on that existing home mortgage, and they can choose during that process to use their certificate of eligibility for a VA home loan guarantee, which, again, guarantees them certain rates. It gets them out of certain insurances, and if they're receiving disability compensation, they can waive certain fees. So, veterans who have existing loans and they're not using a VA home loan guarantee, they can choose to do that by engaging the VA, getting their certificate of eligibility by completing a VA form 26-1880. Again, it's a VA form 26-1880, and they can complete that application or do it through their local Veterans Affairs office, attach a copy of their DD-214 or other equivalent separation document, and we, in this instance in Michigan, would mail it to the Cleveland Regional Office in Cleveland, Ohio, because they are our regional loan processing center. And once you get your certificate of eligibility, you can go to a lender and explore the opportunity for a cash-out refinance loan and using the VA home loan guarantee in that process.
Right, and the thing that I've discovered is that the limit for a home loan on a VA now is, I think they've waived the whole thing, but I know it's at least, you know, $500,000 now.
So we got to understand, when we talk about limits, we have to understand that, again, that VA is not lending any money. In the VA home loan guarantee process, the VA is guaranteeing a loan through a lending institution, meaning if a veteran or a surviving spouse defaults on the loan, the VA will pay the lender a specified amount of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they guarantee the loan, but you go through a traditional financial institution to actually get the money, so to speak.
That is correct. That is correct. And what the VA is basically doing, it's a home loan guarantee is a fancy way of saying that the VA is co-signing your mortgage loan.
Well, yeah, and the thing that you're eliminating for those of us that are not aware is that private mortgage insurance that is many times is added on to a traditional home loan, which can run you $200, $300, $400 a month, depending on your amount of loan. So you can eliminate that because you have somebody guaranteeing the loan instead of your estate.
That is correct. That is
okay.
Yeah.
Good. You sent me that, so I'm following up on that one. Actually, what we're going to do right now, Derek, is why don't we get ourselves all set up here to take another break real quick. And when we come back, we're going to be looking at some of these other questions that we've gotten regarding survivors' benefits. It was one that I got this week about what happens when the veteran passes away from a non-service-connected disability, even though they're 100% disabled. That sounds like a complicated and convoluted question, but wait till we get to it when we come back. So you're listening to Veterans Radio, and we'll be right back after these short messages.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. PFC Robert Young, despite being wounded twice, left medical treatment and fended off another enemy attack by the North Koreans. Details after this. Young's company, spearheading a battalion drive deep in enemy territory, suddenly came under a devastating barrage of enemy mortar and automatic weapons crossfire, which inflicted heavy casualties among his comrades and wounded him in the face and shoulder. Refusing to be evacuated, Young remained in position and continued firing at the enemy until wounded a second time. As he awaited first aid near the company command post, the enemy attacked. Disregarding medical treatment, he took an exposed position and, firing with deadly accuracy, killed five of the enemy. During this action, he was again hit by a hostile fire that knocked him to the ground and destroyed his helmet. Later, when supporting tanks moved forward, Young, his wounds still unattended, directed tank fire that destroyed three enemy gun positions and enabled the company to advance. Wounded again by an enemy mortar burst, and while aiding several of his injured comrades, he demanded that all others be evacuated first.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Are you a veteran or a military spouse interested in starting or growing an existing business? Then you want to connect with VetBiz Central, Michigan's only veteran business resource center, providing free one-on-one business counseling services, including research plans and preparing veterans to be lender ready. If you're in business, VetBiz Central offers comprehensive strategic marketing strategies to help you connect to corporations. They are one of 20 centers nationwide devoted to veteran business development through the U.S. Small Business Administration Office of Veteran Business Development. Vets helping vets. Visit their website at VetBizCentral.org or call 810-767-VETS.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And we're back here on Veterans Radio, and we are talking benefits today. And my guests are Michael Smith from the Washtenaw County Veterans Service Office and retired Brigadier General Carol Ann Falzone from Legal Help for Veterans. My question was that, I don't know if we addressed this before or not, is that if a veteran dies as a result of a non-compensatable disease. Let's suppose that you've got, 100% for broken bones or arthritis or cancer or something like that, and you die of a heart attack. Is the veteran's surviving spouse going to receive benefits for that? And who would like to answer that question?
Dale, I'll take that one, and then General Fasson can help me out. See, we can't just go across the board with just a flat, the veteran was 100%, dies of a non-service-connected condition, are there benefits? Well, in some instances, there will be. In other instances, no. And it deals with what we call the 10-year rule.
That was the big question, the 10-year rule.
Right. If a veteran is 100% permanently and totally disabled for a period of 10 years or more, it doesn't matter what the cause of death is, the surviving spouse will be entitled to dependency indemnity compensation, CAMP VA, military ID card, and any of the other ancillary benefits that go along with it. If a veteran is service-connected at 100% less than 10 years and dies as a result of a condition that is not service-connected, then no, there will be no survivor benefits for that particular surviving spouse, at least not dependency indemnity compensation and CAMP VA and those types of ancillary benefits. Surviving spouse may, if need be, may qualify for the income-based benefit that we refer to as survivor's pension.
Right.
And what is that?
Let me survivor's pension is an income-based entitlement. The VA pays that pension just like the veteran's pension in three different categories. There's a surviving spouse that just needs the income because of a lack of income from other sources or no income from other sources, or a surviving spouse who's considered housebound, or a surviving spouse who's in need of aid and attendance and needs assistance from another person for two of the five activities of daily living, and is out in the market paying out of the pocket for that medical need for aid and attendance, either by paying an in-home care provider or an assisted living facility or a nursing home facility for that medical need for aid and attendance. And then in that category, that one category alone, the VA will count those out-of-pocket medical expenses associated with aid and attendance to reduce countable income below the maximum annual pension rate, which is set every year by Congress. And if it is reduced all the way to zero, then the surviving spouse will get the full monthly benefit, which I believe right now is a little bit over $1,200. If there is a remaining portion of residual income, then the VA minuses that from the annual income to determine what the monthly rate will be.
Oh, got to get into higher math here, it sounds like.
The survivor's pension can get complicated because it doesn't just deal with income. We also have to consider assets for that program.
Right. Correct.
All right, so I strongly encourage the people that ask that question that you get in contact with a veteran service officer somewhere along the line so that they can explain it to you so you can plan ahead a little bit if you need to. Because I know that there are some people that I know that are concerned because they are 100% disabled for one cause and they come down with something else and they're worried that their spouse may not have, you know, funds coming in once they pass on. So I would encourage everybody out there, if that's a situation that you are in, is to contact your veteran service officer wherever you happen to be.
But Dale, I think, Michael, you did a phenomenal job on answering that. I think, though, the only person that knows really how to answer that, Dale, and is God, because it's the 10-year rule. So if a veteran is out there, he's 100%, and he's worrying about his spouse, that's spectacular. But we can't determine, no VSO can determine, anybody can determine what it's going to be like if he leaves this earth. And so it's the time period, it's those questions that sometimes get very complicated, because we don't know that answer. The veteran doesn't know that answer if he's going to survive greater than 10 years. I mean, if he does, that's fabulous, because then I think that's an answer of security for the spouse. But we never know that.
Right, especially people that have, people that are getting up there in age or have multiple issues sometimes, and many of them are not service-connected, unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, would be the answer to that question. So anyway, I'm still suggesting that they need to plan a little bit. And so they need to find out what their options might be if they do come down with something unrelated to their service.
Well, even with the survivors, there is a little issue that's related that we keep, and I don't want to say preaching, but it is, if there is a claim out there, and the spouse is aware of it and the veteran does die unexpectedly, please call your VSO, call Legal Help for Veterans, get in touch with county counselor like Michael, and because there's substitution claim, that it just breaks my heart when widows will come up to me and say, well, we had a claim and it wasn't decided and now we have nothing, but that they never knew about the substitution claim, but it has to be done within a year of death.
Okay.
So, I think that's really important too.
That is important. I was thinking about a friend of ours who's had leukemia, but he had the wrong kind. And, his claim was denied. And, he's been gone much, way beyond a year now. But does remind me of another question that you had sent me about someone who had assumed that had, B-cell leukemia, and you had assumed that he was a Vietnam veteran, but he was not. Could you tell us a little bit about that claim?
Yes, this veteran, and of course, you got to remember, Christina Darrow was receiving multiple requests and inquiries during the Veterans Summit that was hosted last month in September. And so when she forwarded some of the questions to me, the folks who wrote her did not, it was a little bit limited about in the information. And right. In this particular case, there had to be some interpretation because the veteran basically said, the VA just denied MPN plus JAK2 B-cell population. And, you know, I'm sure Christina was doing the same thing I was doing. We were both scratching our heads like, what does this mean? Well, the veteran had contracted myeloproliferative neoplasm, MPN, with a JAK2 mutation. And JAK2 is just a reference to a protein. With a restricted B cell population. So it took some investigation on my part. And the veteran never said, or the question never included the veteran's military service, what branch, when the person was in. So I wrote an entire response back to this veteran saying, hey, I'm assuming that you're wondering why the VA denied your MPN with JAK2 mutation and restricted B cell population as a Vietnam veteran who may have been exposed to herbicides or Agent Orange. And so I wrote him the reason why the VA denied him, and that was because a myeloproliferative neoplasm is, in fact, a cancer of the blood, but it is not one of the chronic B-cell leukemias that the VA recognizes as being related to Agent Orange. And so I wrote him that, and I said, that's probably the reason why the VA denied you. Well, he called me, and it, as it turns out, he was a veteran of the Korean War era, who was an Air Force veteran stationed in Guam, and he developed this MPN JAK2 mutation with a restricted B-cell population, and he was diagnosed at the VA hospital. So he thought, because the VA hospital diagnosed him, and he read an article, you know, was trying to figure out, well, where did this come from? And he read about the fact that Guam was considered a Superfund site, meaning it was contaminated with a bunch of chemicals that the government used. And he said, hey, you know, I handled jet fuel while I was in the Air Force, and I was stationed there at Guam, and I read that Guam is one of these Superfund sites, and so I kind of assumed that that's how I got it. So what he was doing was, what a lot of veterans do is, I got something, this has to be related to service, let me figure out how it's related to service, and then they file a claim, and then they don't understand why the VA denies them. Well, the reason the VA denied him is that even if Guam is a Superfund site and there were chemicals stored there by our government or used by our government, until our government, either through the DOD, the Department of Defense, or the VA, or both, recognized that those chemicals led to or caused a particular medical condition in service personnel, then there is no presumption of service connection. But I did explain to him how he could potentially appeal this decision based on what we call direct service connection by getting a medical opinion from a doctor after having read materials about Superfund sites and benzene and jet fuel and things like that, and what's the potential for a person to develop this myeloproliferative neoplasm because they were exposed to jet fuel in the military. If a doctor says, hey, it's at least as likely as not, he may have the medical evidence that he needs to appeal the denial that the VA gave him.
Okay. You always got to check this stuff out. You never know what the VA is going to do as far as yes or no on a particular condition, but you've got to use people like Michael and Carol Ann so that you can follow up on your claims. And I think that that's important. We're rapidly running out of time again today. And the last question, I guess what I wanted to bring up, Michael, is the updated comprehensive assistance for family caregivers. You said that was recently expanded, and I wondered if you could follow up on that for our audience.
Yes. So the VA has had the caregiver support program in place, essentially for family members who want to volunteer to be the primary caregiver of a veteran who served after September 11th, 2001, and has certain disabilities rated at 70% or higher and requires a home caregiver. And this caregiver support program was put in place by the VA to pay those home caregivers, to collaborate with them and the veterans' primary care team at the VA to implement or to develop and implement a home care plan. Well, it was always restricted to those veterans who served after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was an amendment to the Defense Authorization Act a couple years ago that said that they were going to expand the caregiver support program and in two phases. So what we just had in the month of October, and it just went into effect, is an expansion of that caregiver support program to now include veterans who served prior to May 7th, 1975. So that includes all of our Vietnam War veterans, World War II veterans, Korean War veterans, and all the peacetime veterans who served on active duty in between. And they, too, also have disabilities rated at 70% or higher. And they need an in-home caregiver, and if there's a family member who would like to do that, this program has been expanded to include those folks. This was a part of a phase-in. Now, the third phase of expansion will occur a couple of years after this one, and it will then be inclusive of all veterans who served on active duty at all times.
Wow. That's pretty generous, I must say. It's nice that people are actually, you know, are doing these things for our veterans. And, you know, because so many of these medical problems that veterans have come on later in life because they've kind of just kind of festered inside for 40 or 50 years. So this sounds like a great thing that they've got going there. We've got about 4 minutes left to go. Carol Ann, is there anything that our people should be aware of that you'd like to talk about?
No, I'm glad you brought that up, Michael, with the caregivers. Being a nurse, I think that's very critical. If you need any help, please call Veteran Service Officer, call Legal Help for Veterans. I mean, we're out there to help you with your disability benefits, to help you understand what you're going through. But please don't give up hope and don't do it yourself. Because as Michael described with, our gentleman, that was in Guam, there's a lot of research and we've probably done it and we've seen other cases and we can help you, go through this process.
Right. Yeah. Cause you're always finding precedent that's out there. And I think that that's really important that there are so many cases that have been accepted or been rejected. And, people like Michael and Carol Ann or your local VSO or other, legal, help firms that are out there have access to these things. And we just can't find them as regular old people. It just takes too long, too much work. Michael, anything else that you'd like to bring up today? We've got about 3 minutes left.
All right. I'd like to be able to go back to the difference between CHAMP VA and TRICARE just real quickly.
Good.
CHAMP VA is the Civilian Health and Medical Program VA. It is specifically for the spouses and eligible dependents of veterans who are 100% service-connected, permanent, and total. So it is a health insurance program specifically for that category of dependents and that category of veterans. TRICARE, on the other hand, is a health insurance program for members of our active duty forces, meaning not only the their family members, but our active duty forces. It's also for members of the National Guard Reserve and their families. And it is also for the survivors of retirees. It's also for military retirees. And it's also for the former spouses of retirees if they qualify for benefits under the Uniform Services Former Spousal Protection Act. So we should think that CHAMP VA is specific to veterans. And yes, military retirees and our active duty members and National Guard members are considered veterans, but their health care plan is TRICARE.
Okay, right? And you can't have one with the other. It's either one or the other.
That is correct. If you are TRICARE eligible, you are not eligible for CHAMP VA.
Correct. Okay. And another way to remember that, Michael, you did that outstanding, is when I think of TRICARE, I think of the Department of Defense. And that's a, so you can't, two different towers, VA, CHAMP, and DOD, TRICARE. It's insurance.
Okay. All right, we got it. And it sort of acts like a Medicare supplement or a Medicare Advantage plan for older veterans, doesn't it? It wraps around Medicare.
Well, TRICARE actually covers our active duty members and their spouses and National Guard members and their spouses and survivors and former spouses without any consideration to Medicare.
Correct.
It's when you get to TRICARE for life at age 65 that they begin to incorporate some of the aspects of Medicare in the healthcare coverage, but TRICARE is still in place. Now, CHAMP VA, yes, CHAMP VA does have a component, meaning they will be the primary if there is no other health insurance. If there is other health insurance, you have to let CHAMP VA know about that other health insurance, and then CHAMP VA will provide a secondary or a second rider to go to.
Okay, we got to go, guys. I want to thank you both very much for being on our program today. Carol Ann Falzone from Legal Help for Veterans and Michael Smith, Executive Director of the Washtenaw County Veterans Service Office. Thank you both very much for being on the program. We will be doing another benefits program at the end of November. So if you have any questions or concerns, feel free to contact Veterans Radio and we will forward your questions on to our local experts. Thank you both very much. Okay, we got 10 seconds to go. Good night. All right, so this is Veterans Radio, and until next week, we'll be back. You are dismissed.